So imagine dropping, I don't know, $25 million on what you've always been told is the safest, most bulletproof asset in commercial real estate.
Right, a traditional grocery-anchored shopping center.
Exactly. You sign the papers, you close the deal, and then you realize your biggest threat for foot traffic isn't another supermarket at all.
It's the newly renovated Target.
Yeah, a mile down the road that just completely overhauled its grocery supply chain. Welcome to the new rules of retail real estate.
The old playbooks are, I mean, they're officially obsolete.
They really are. And navigating this shift, well, it requires localized expertise, which is exactly why this deep dive is brought to you by Eureka Business Group.
The premier authority in the market.
Right, the premier authority and commercial real estate broker in the Dallas-Fort Worth market, specializing specifically in retail.
Yep.
So our mission today is to unpack this massive stack of commercial retail, net lease, and a 1031 exchange news we've seen from late May to early June 2026.
And we've got a lot of ground to cover.
We do. We're keeping a laser focus on the DFW area, but we're also connecting those local shifts to the broader national macroeconomic trends that are basically dictating where capital is flowing right now.
We certainly have a dense stack of data to get through today.
Yeah.
I mean, rather than just skimming the surface of these headlines, we really need to look at the underlying mechanics driving these deals.
Absolutely.
Because we're seeing major structural changes,
Yeah.
from the shuttering of legacy department stores all the way to these multi-billion-dollar institutional portfolio
It's
acquisitions.
a huge spectrum.
It is. And what matters most to an investor right now is understanding the why behind these capital movements. Because the market in 2026 is aggressively penalizing outdated
Oh,
assumptions.
heavily penalizing them.
Right, especially when it comes to pricing risk and evaluating actual tenant productivity.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the seismic shifts happening right here in our own backyard in the DFW area, because it perfectly illustrates that penalty you just mentioned.
It really does.
We're seeing this stark bifurcation in what kinds of massive retail spaces actually survive. On one hand, you've got the Dallas Stars.
Oh, the Willow Bend project.
Yeah, they're officially planning a new arena and a mixed-use entertainment district at the Shops at Willow Bend in Plano. But then on the other hand, you have Saks the Global officially pulling the plug and shuttering the historic downtown Dallas Neiman Marcus flagship.
Talk about the end of an era.
I know. Think of the DFW retail landscape like a forest ecosystem, right? The old massive canopy trees, these legacy department stores like Neiman Marcus, they're falling. But their removal is opening up sunlight for an entirely new kind of growth, like these massive sports and entertainment districts.
What's fascinating here is in the why. That separation of historical sentiment from actual store productivity is arguably the most important shift in modern retail underwriting.
Yeah, you can't just bank on nostalgia anymore.
Exactly. The closure of that downtown Neiman Marcus, I mean, it illustrates the absolute death of trophy value. For decades, municipalities and institutional investors just assumed that a prestigious legacy brand automatically anchored a vibrant retail ecosystem.
They just trusted the name on the building.
They treated the brand name itself as a substitute for hard performance data. But the market today, it only cares about sales per square foot, replacement demand, and consistent foot traffic.
The actual math.
Right. If a brand cannot drive those three metrics, the underlying valuation of the real estate will just collapse, regardless of how historic the tenant is. Investors are scrutinizing department store exposure with a level of ruthlessness we just haven't seen before.
Which makes the Plano project with the Dallas Stars such a fascinating counter move.
Yeah.
Because they aren't trying to replace a dead department store with another massive retailer. They're changing the entire category of the real estate.
It's a massive repositioning signal. Introducing a sports-themed entertainment district completely resets the underlying mechanics of that trade area. I mean, think about it. A traditional mall operates on a very predictable traffic curve.
Like a steady hum during the day.
Exactly, tapering off in the evening. But an arena and entertainment district flips that curve entirely.
Oh, for sure.
You're suddenly drawing massive, concentrated crowds on evenings and weekends. And that fundamentally alters the highest and best use of all the surrounding parcels.
So an inline space that used to be like perfect for a boutique clothing store?
Might now be far more valuable as a high-volume sports bar or a quick-service restaurant. You are completely rewriting the tenant demand profile for that entire Plano submarket.
So, okay, if you're a landlord holding one of these massive empty department store boxes and you don't happen to have an NHL team ready to build an arena,
Which most don't.
right, what do? You just have tens of thousands of square feet of empty concrete. And this is what brings us to the explosive rise of experiential and service-oriented backfill.
The entertainment plays?
Yeah. JLL just released data showing this staggering 16.5 million square foot pipeline for location-based entertainment across 721 planned locations.
It's incredible volume.
And we're seeing it locally, too, like the 11 Max Indoor Fun Park taking over that massive former retail space on I-635 in Farmers Branch.
And we're also seeing a massive pivot toward heavy footprint fitness.
Oh, like the Amped Fitness deal.
Right. They just signed a nearly 33,000 square foot lease at Watauga Pavilion. Landlords are, well, they're hunting for tenants that basically force the consumer to leave their house.
Because you can't stream a trampoline park.
Exactly. And you can't lift weights over a Zoom call. These concepts dramatically increase customer dwell time. A customer might spend 20 minutes running into a traditional retailer, but they'll spend 2 or 3 hours at an indoor fun park or a sprawling fitness center.
And that extended dwell time has to be a massive value add for the surrounding inline tenants, right? Particularly the food and beverage operators who capture that spillover traffic.
It is, but...
Wait, hold on. Let me just play devil's advocate here. A trampoline park sounds great for foot traffic, but as a landlord, aren't you terrified of the build-out cost?
That is the big catch.
Because if you lease to a traditional retailer and they go bankrupt, you're left with a fairly standard vanilla box. You just lease it to the next guy.
Uh-huh.
But if you lease to an indoor fun park, the capital expenditure to reinforce the floors, upgrade the HVAC, build specialized layouts, it's enormous.
It's a huge upfront commitment.
And if that concept goes under in 2 years, you are stuck with a gigantic, highly customized, entirely useless warehouse full of foam pits. I mean, aren't landlords just trading predictable corporate credit for intense operational risk?
Yes. You've identified the exact friction point in the current market. Experiential retail absolutely solves the vacancy problem, but it introduces severe structural and credit risks.
It's not a free lunch.
Far from it. This is where underwriting has to become hyper-specialized. A landlord can't just look at the tenant's projected revenue anymore. They have to scrutinize the capital backing of the operator, the specialized insurance liabilities, and, perhaps most importantly, the parking constraints.
Oh, right. Because if an indoor fun park hosts, say, a weekend dodgeball tournament and 800 people show up,
they take every spot.
It completely paralyzes the parking lot for the local sandwich shop next door.
Yeah.
The anchor ends up suffocating the smaller tenants.
And that parking constraint is a very real mechanical issue that can breach co-tenancy clauses and trigger rent reductions for your other tenants.
Ouch.
So this inherent operational risk with experiential retail is precisely why so much capital is running in the opposite direction.
Towards service-based net leases.
Exactly. Look at the recent Four Corners Property Trust deal. FCPT is acquiring up to 102 Mission Pet Health veterinary properties across 31 states for $268 million.
$250 million moving into vet clinics. That is a massive institutional pivot away from traditional retail categories.
Well, veterinary clinics offer a mechanical advantage that indoor fun parks just don't have. Sticky leases.
Because they're so hard to move.
Right. The build-out for a vet clinic requires specialized plumbing, a heavy electrical load for medical equipment, x-ray rooms, surgical suites. It costs an absolute fortune to build.
But once it's built...
Once it's built, the tenant is highly unlikely to ever relocate because moving that infrastructure is just too expensive. Plus, pet healthcare is a recurring, non-discretionary expense.
People love their dogs.
They do. Consumers will cut their streaming services or they'll delay buying clothes, but they will not skip their dog's surgery.
Never.
When you combine that non-discretionary demand with the private equity backing that's driving the consolidation of these vet clinics right now, you get an incredibly stable e-commerce resistant asset.
So because the heavy lifting and the sheer risk required to execute experiential retail are so high, conservative capital is aggressively targeting these ultimate safe havens.
They want predictability.
Right. They want veterinary clinics, and they want necessity-based, grocery-anchored retail. And we're seeing massive institutional movement here. TPG Real Estate and its partners just acquired Echo Realty for $2 billion.
That's a huge play.
Taking over a portfolio of roughly 230 retail centers anchored by grocers and convenience tenants. $2 billion.
A $2 billion acquisition is a definitive statement from institutional capital. It proves that despite all the noise in the broader economy, necessity-based retail remains the absolute bedrock of defensive investment strategies.
And we see that trickling down too.
Yes, that institutional pricing discipline definitely trickles down to the private markets. We just saw Newport Capital Partners sell West Colonial Oaks, which is a 161,000 square foot grocery-anchored center in Orlando, to a Dallas-based family office for $25.1 million.
So DFW Capital is looking outward.
We're seeing DFW Capital look across the Sun Belt for demographic growth patterns that mirror Texas, hunting for durable, inflation-resistant income.
It's a hunt for pure cash flow durability. And it's driving pricing to levels that, frankly, look completely irrational on paper.
Like the Chipotle deal.
Yes. And SRS Real Estate Partners team recently sold a newly built single-tenant Chipotle in Palmdale, California, at a 4.45% cap rate.
Which is incredibly low.
Let's break down the mechanics of that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an investor borrowing money from a bank at, what, 6.5 or 7% interest?
Just give or take, yeah.
And you buy a building that only yields a 4.45% return, you are in negative leverage. You are literally bleeding money on day one. So why on earth is an investor willing to pay that price?
Well, usually an acquisition at a 4.45% cap rate in this interest rate environment is driven by a 1031 exchange.
The tax play.
This is a vital mechanic to understand. When an investor sells a piece of commercial property, they face a massive capital gains tax bill. The IRS code allows them to defer those taxes if they reinvest the proceeds into a like-kind property.
But there's a catch.
The catch is the ticking clock. They only have 45 days to identify a replacement property.
That is no time at all.
It goes by fast. When you're staring down a multi-million dollar tax penalty and a 45-day deadline, your primary goal completely shifts from maximizing yield to preserving capital.
So they just swallow the negative leverage.
Investors will gladly take negative leverage on a newly built Chipotle backed by corporate credit because it represents a safe harbor to park their equity and avoid the IRS.
Wow. Okay, that makes perfect sense for the single tenant net lease space. But here's where it gets really interesting. Going back to the larger grocery-anchored centers, like that $25 million Orlando deal,
yeah.
There's a massive underlying threat developing.
With the mass merchants.
Yes. We always hear that grocery-anchored is the ultimate safe bet, right?
Right.
But FMI just released new data showing that consumers are now equally likely to name mass retailers, specifically Walmart and Target, as their primary grocery destination.
They've caught up completely.
They've drawn totally level with traditional supermarkets. So if I'm an investor buying a traditional grocery-anchored center, how do I not view a newly renovated Target a mile down the road as an existential threat to my property's valuation?
You have to view it as a threat. The definition of a grocery anchor is fundamentally changing, and investors just have to update their underwriting models. It is no longer enough to just verify that a supermarket holds the anchor lease.
You can't just check the box anymore.
Right. You have to evaluate the specific supply chain mechanics of the competitors in that trade area. Take Target, for example.
Mm.
They have recently invested heavily in upgrading their food supply chain infrastructure.
Oh, I've noticed their grocery section's getting much bigger.
Exactly. If a Target can replenish its fresh produce and dry goods 2 days faster than it used to, that has severe mechanical implications. It means Target can shrink its backroom storage footprint, expand its retail sales floor, and drive down its per-unit pricing.
And that actively bleeds foot traffic away from the traditional supermarket sharing the exact same intersection.
It does.
So an investor can't just look at the rent roll, see a supermarket, and feel safe. They have to map out the logistics capabilities of every single big-box retailer within a 5-mile radius.
They absolutely must. If your supermarket tenant sees their sales per square foot drop because Target is cannibalizing their grocery business, your supermarket's percentage rent falls. Eventually, their occupancy cost burden becomes too high and they vacate.
Which kills the whole center.
Right. The $2 billion TPG deal validates that necessity-based retail is still highly desired. But sophisticated investors like the ones advised by Eureka Business Group know that they have to stress test the definition of necessity against mass merchant competition before they deploy capital.
This all forces a very important question, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Why is capital acting so cautiously? Why are buyers overpaying for single-tenant fast food to avoid taxes and fleeing to veterinary clinics?
It's the macro picture.
It is, because we're looking at a brutal macro squeeze affecting both the cost of capital and the consumer's wallet. Let's look at the data. The May jobs report was incredibly strong. the economy added 172,000 non-farm payroll jobs, and unemployment held steady at 4.3%.
Very resilient.
On the surface, that sounds like a massive win for retail real estate, right? More jobs, more spending.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it's a win for consumer spending power, sure, but it is a massive headwind for commercial real estate financing.
Because of the Fed.
Exactly. The Federal Reserve operates on a dual mandate, balancing employment with inflation. When the jobs report comes in that hot, it signals to the market that the Fed has no immediate reason to cut interest rates.
So rates stay higher for longer.
And as a direct result of that jobs report, Treasury yields spiked. Commercial mortgage rates are generally priced as a spread over the 10-year Treasury. So when that yield spikes, the cost of debt for a commercial real estate buyer instantly becomes more expensive.
It's like this massive game of musical chairs. The music is still playing. I mean, the NRF is forecasting a 4.4% growth in U.S. retail sales in 2026, and jobs are strong.
Right, the demand is there.
But the chairs, the actual physical real estate assets, they're getting wildly expensive to finance because Treasury yields keep pushing rate expectations higher.
Yeah.
It's like running a business where your top-line revenue looks fantastic, but your cost of goods sold is secretly destroying your net profit.
That tension creates what we call a wide bid-ask spread. The seller is looking at the 4.4% retail sales growth and demanding a premium price for their building.
Naturally.
But the buyer is looking at the spiked Treasury yields and their 7% mortgage quote, and they simply cannot hit the seller's number without taking on negative leverage.
So transactions just freeze.
They freeze. And at the same time, we have a secondary squeeze happening at the property level with the consumer. Inflation is really sticky.
Yeah, like a Dollar General.
Right. They just reported their first quarter sales soared 3.4% because consumers are trading down at an accelerated rate.
What does that accelerated trade down actually look like when you zoom in on a specific shopping center? Because to me, it paints a really fragile picture.
It means the parking lot might look full, but the capital is only flowing to one specific tenant. Dollar General is thriving because the middle-class consumer is now buying their basic household goods there instead of at a premium grocer.
But if you own a retail center anchored by a thriving dollar store,
you can't just assume your entire rent roll is healthy. You have to look at the discretionary inline tenants, the boutique clothing store, the specialized fitness concept, the nail salon.
Because if the consumer is so pressured by inflation that they're buying discounted toothpaste, they're almost certainly cutting out the discretionary spending that keeps those inline tenants alive.
Exactly.
The anchor is pulling the traffic, but the consumer's wallet is completely empty by the time they walk past the smaller shops. That is a terrifying dynamic for a landlord relying on a diversified rent roll.
It is. But there is a mechanical silver lining for landlords in this high interest rate environment.
I could use the silver lining right about now.
Well, because financing is so expensive and because construction materials and labor costs remain elevated, the pipeline for new retail supply has essentially shut down.
Nobody's building.
CBRE just released their Q1 2026 data showing record low new retail completions. We only saw 4.7 million square feet of new retail space delivered nationally.
Wait. Nationally. For an economy the size of the United States, 4.7 million square feet is a statistical rounding error. It's practically nothing.
It really is. And when new supply drops to near zero, existing landlords gain immense pricing power. If a retailer wants to expand, they have very few options to choose from.
So rents go up.
That scarcity is currently supporting a 2.4% rent growth nationally. However, this is where local market intelligence becomes critical. DFW investors cannot rely on that national narrative of scarcity.
Why not?
Because that same CBRE report notes that Texas accounts for over 30% of all that new national construction. Five of the top 10 construction markets in the country are located in Texas.
Wow. So while landlords in the Midwest might be sitting back and raising rents because there's no competition, landlords in Dallas-Fort Worth are still dealing with active construction cranes.
Lots of them.
You can't blindly underwrite a property in DFW assuming the tenant has nowhere else to go. You have to know exactly what is being built on the dirt 2 miles away.
Exactly. You must underwrite the micro market. You have to analyze the specific demographic shifts, the localized supply pipeline, and the real-time sales data of the existing tenants. A macro-level assumption will absolutely destroy your yield in a hyperactive development market like Texas.
So to bring all of these threads together, we are operating in an environment where historical assumptions are a massive liability. We're watching the complete repricing of legacy department store real estate right here in DFW and seeing the massive operational risks associated with experiential backfill.
Yep, the trampoline parks and arenas.
And we're watching institutional billions chase the safety of veterinary clinics and grocery anchor centers, even as the very definition of a grocery anchor is actively being rewritten by Target and Walmart supply chains.
The Target is always moving.
And hovering above all of this is a macro economy where strong jobs reports actually hurt commercial real estate financing by driving treasury yields higher, forcing these 1031 exchange buyers to accept negative leverage just to escape the IRS.
It is a profoundly complex matrix of capital constraints and shifting consumer behavior. Navigating it requires an operator who understands how a 50 basis point shift in the 10-year treasury directly alters the viability of a local retail lease.
Which is exactly why active investors turn to the specialized expertise of Eureka Business Group. Having a broker who understands both the macro debt markets and the micro realities of DFW dirt, that's the difference between identifying a generational opportunity and getting caught holding a dying asset.
Well said. But before we wrap up, I want to introduce one final forward-looking mechanical challenge drawn from the recent data.
Oh, lay it on me.
We've spent this entire session discussing how to underwrite for long-term defensive stability, right? But a new white paper recently highlighted the impending 2026 FIFA World Cup.
Oh, wow.
Texas and DFW specifically will be at the absolute center of this. And this is not just a localized event. It will create massive event-driven traffic disruptions, completely altering supply chains, hotel occupancies, and retail foot traffic across the entire region.
It's going to be a tidal wave of global demand just crashing into local infrastructure.
The question for a commercial real estate investor is, how do you mathematically underwrite an anomaly?
That's a great question.
Do you adjust your late 2025 and 2026 leasing strategies to capture a massive six-week global phenomenon? Do you restructure leases to include percentage rent clauses for temporary pop-ups and brand activations?
Right, trying to cash in on the spike.
Exactly. Or do you decide that the operational risk of chasing a temporary windfall is just too high and you rigidly stick to your long-term neighborhood necessity fundamentals? It is a fascinating tension between capturing unprecedented short-term upside and maintaining the defensive stability we've been talking about today.
I love that tension. It forces an investor to decide what kind of risk profile they truly want to manage. A massive global event disrupting the local ecosystem, even if just for a season, changes the math on everything.
It really does. Something to mull over before your next acquisition.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep digging into the data, keep questioning the consensus, and we will catch you next time.